The following is a presentation of the Six Arrows Radio Network.
Welcome to the Ham Radio 360 podcast with your host, K4CDN, Kael Nelson.
And welcome back in to the Ham Radio 360 podcast. You can find us online, hamradio360.com. This is a great show. I don't want to say too much in front of it because it's going to speak for itself. Let me just kind of say it that way. This is one that we started working on back before the break, and I'm just stoked that I can bring it to you because I didn't want to let this one get away from me, and it's actually two parts. This is part one, I guess you'll have to say. And I hope you enjoy it. I can't say anything else. Let's just get right to it. All right. So we got a set of twins. This is our very first set of twins on the show. This is our very first set of brothers on the show. It's also the very first show we've ever had with guys who have sequential call signs. And in addition to that, it's our very first rocket scientist. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. It's Brenton and Bryce, and we're just excited to have you here from Faraday RF. I've been following you guys on Twitter. We'll talk about your business in just a little bit, but I really want to get to know who you guys are. Rocket scientist in real life. My youngest son just about lost his mind when I said, hey, Dad's got to go talk to some rocket scientists. And really excited to know what and how in the world these young millennial rocket scientists decided to get, why did they decide to get in ham radio?
I guess I'll take it first here. Both Brent and I are electrical engineers at SpaceX. I guess I'll just start off by saying, like, we don't represent SpaceX on the show here at all, but just making sure that's known. But we're both electrical engineers that work on avionics, and so that's why we're out here in the Los Angeles area. Both of us grew up in the Boston, Mass area. We were members of the WB1GOF club for years. So we actually got into ham radio before we even got into rocketry. Or I guess ham radio is what got us both into electronics. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Brent. But ham radio is kind of the lead-in for us.
Yeah, it sure was. And I think as back in 2004, 2005 time, we both decided that we wanted to get our licenses, and we'd been mulling on it for a little bit and playing around with electronics. Our parents had bought us some, like, you know, starter together kits for an alarm clock and this other thing, and we're like, this is amazing. And it was just like, well, the old Radio Shack kits. Yeah, and we were just like, you know, like amateur radio. There was no real maker movement, no real like hacker movement back then that we were aware of, and ham radio was that outlet for us. It was, let's go do this. This looks like a lot of fun for electronics and fun that we can have using electronics.
Nice. Yeah, I remember those kits. Now, you may or may not know, I was a Radio Shack employee for years in high school. And Christmas time was always so much fun in the store. Now, I got to default for a second. It was a lot of fun most days, but Radio Shack was maybe not the most fun place to work with the politics of economy inside the store itself, and then the general branding. But man, what a blast it was to get these things in for Christmas and see parents come in and, you know, can my son really do this? You remember the little 160-in-1 kits that had the little spring terminals? I still have mine in my parents' garage or somewhere, I think. I need to get it out. But, you know, you're right. There was no maker movement, but did we just rename the maker? Did we just kind of rename what used to happen in ham radio and start calling it maker just to make it sound more millennial friendly?
I would say no.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say that if you look at the millennial post that that I just wrote for in a response to Sterling Coffee, N0SSC, his blog post, which kind of blew up there. I mean, he admitted it was a clickbait title. You know, millennials are killing ham radio. actually, if you read it, he actually makes a point that not that millennials are killing it, but more that we're different. Like, yeah, we are changing the paradigm of ham radio. So I went on Faraday RF because we've been good friends with Sterling for years now. Back, we had an old website in college, for collegearc.com, doesn't exist anymore. and we met him there. And I kind of built upon that from our perspective of what benefits do millennials have? Like what from our generation, especially people who are into technology, what traits do we have that actually could absolutely change the hobby for the better and likely for the long term, in to let it have these traits that survive, so and make it more relevant. So that's what I went upon in the article and building upon his points that he made.
You know, you hear a lot of people. I'm sorry, but you hear a lot of people like just totally freak out because they don't think kids, and I'm calling you guys kids because you're much younger than me. But you know, we hear these people in panic mode. Oh my gosh, the hobby is going to die. Blah blah blah. I've heard the same thing in every hobby I've been involved with since the internet kind of came around on these forums that we participate in. You know, the internet's killing the hobby. The hobby is going to die because young people don't want to get into it. But here, you know, we got rocket scientists on the show right now talking about how they are participating in, and really how ham radio got them into their position, their jobs. And I'll talk about that in just a second, but I think I might have cut Brent off. And Brent, I'm sorry, but come back in with your thought there.
Sure. Yeah, no worries at all. I just wanted to add to come back into the point about did we just rebrand ham radio and the maker scene, like naming. And I disagree with that because ham radio has always been a subset of the electronics community. It's been a very focused subset, whereas there's been people playing around with electronics for as long as electronics have been around. And although there was a vibrant community within ham radio, and ham radio itself is based a lot on community, which is something that was fairly unique to it. And I believe with the maker movement that happened over the last decade, the other parts of electronics communities sort of rose in their prominence as a community. So you have things like that were isolated in the past, like ham radio. You have like the Bytes computer movements back, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. That's before my time. But these isolated groups, and now you have them all sort of united under this sort of hacker and maker community that really sprung out because of the internet and because of the access to cheap parts and cheap prototyping services.
Nice.
Within the last decade.
Yeah, and that makes total sense to me. It really just, like you said, the internet did it, because I mean, how would we even be having this conversation without it? And really, why would we be having the conversation without it? And what did they say? The video killed the radio star.
And
yeah, I remember that song when it first came out.
Yeah, Kale, I'll add one more thing that it kind of blows my mind. Bryce and I in college, we ran the K2GXT amateur radio club at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and we did a high altitude balloon back in 2010, and there were very little services to get circuit boards made cheaply. So we actually etched those circuit boards in our apartment, you know, using whatever acid we were using at the time.
Ferrochloride.
And we put our, you know, we printed out the circuit board on photo paper and ironed it onto the boards and everything, drilled press. And, you know, it took us days, and the quality was pretty bad, but it worked. And now you can spend, you know, $20 and get a four-layer circuit board in 2 weeks.
Yeah. You can get them made in China, get them made in America, you can get them made anywhere. And it's ridiculous how rapid the turnaround is on that thing. I mean, it's just amazing.
So really tying it back in, I think it's important that we do not try to make the other electronics communities feel like ham radio was the original, because we were just part of that original ecosystem. We weren't the original. And to the best of my understanding, and I think that's important because we need to include everyone from that community and not say we are this unique brand. We offer a lot of unique abilities within electronics that other parts of electronics communities don't, but they also have a lot of skills and abilities.
It's another gear in the mesh.
Very true. Yes.
Yeah. I like that. Which kind of goes back to your job and how amateur radio electronics got you into amateur radio, and now amateur radio has you in on electronics. So it's just kind of a like a sine wave. I don't know, going up and down. You know, maybe.
Certainly keeps us busy. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you guys are kids up in the Northeast, and you're building these Radio Shack kits. I mean, did you guys ever just get a set of walkie-talkies for Christmas and be like, you know, I wonder if we can make these talk any longer, or wonder why this wire's wrapped around this magnet. Did you guys ever just like start destroying and hacking stuff as kids, or did you just play with the kits your parents got you and kind of learn from there?
I would say that we didn't like take like the walkie-talkies and make them go further. Although, I mean, we played with walkie-talkies and stuff, usually in terms of like, I don't know, when we were playing paintball or if we were kind of, I don't know,
sneaking around the neighborhood in the middle of the night.
Yeah, pretty much. but we definitely like took apart, like I remember, even from a mechanical standpoint, I remember like taking apart an old rototiller, you know, like the gardens. I just remember taking apart the engine, kind of getting covered in like gasoline, like figuring out, oh wow, that's a piston, right? Having no clue how to put it back together. But it was fun to like learn how that stuff worked. And then I remember we took apart a TV once, like an old TV that was broken. Right. That was really cool. And that was like we for years we would use scrap parts from the resistors and everything. I think Brent spent like 2 weeks once just like organizing resistors, and that's how we learned resistor color codes. Like he was better than me for years because of that, but he was also went kind of crazy.
Yeah, he's a little older.
I was seeing color codes.
Yeah,
at night.
Yeah, it's like when you got to playing Tetris too much, and you would wake up in the middle of the night playing Tetris in your mind, but you woke up in the middle of the night looking at resistor color codes.
Exactly.
Red, yellow, brown.
You know, we had a cheat sheet at Radio Shack you could have gotten for like $4 back in the day, and it would.
Oh, don't tell me that.
So here I am, a stay-at-home dad, homeschooling my kids. My kids are into some things that are fun and cool, but really just not electronically inclined. Although my eldest daughter did say, Dad, I would really like to finish building that radio kit we started last year. So she's kind of wanting to solder a little bit more. Any encouragement for parents with kids? I know a lot of parents now want their children to grow up and be coders, you know, and they're like, got their 3-year-old in there writing code or something. I'm not going down that road. I'm not interested in that necessarily. I'm going to let the child make their decision. But, you know, when you guys, now that you're older and you look back, are those kits the best places to start to really introduce, or is there anything any better nowadays, you know, 25 years later?
Well, I guess my thoughts in this is that, I mean, the times are changing all the time, so there's always different avenues. Mm-hmm. I think the best thing that our parents did, because our dad especially had a little bit more of a knack for technology, and you know, he did a lot of his own mechanics and a little bit of his own soldering, but never really understood the electronics. Like theory themselves, he could put some kits together. And but what he really did was, both my parents did, was to enable us to explore these interests that we had, but never pushed us to do it.
Mm.
So and I really think that was key, because it became this fun thing that Bryce and I did together, and it wasn't something that we felt like was work. Or something that we should do just like school. And what ended up happening was I remember for years not really understanding why the circuits were going together these ways, but I could understand more and more these different blocks and reading the schematics. And I how to apply them and like how these things sort of mesh together. And it really, it taught me the fun side of electronics and the fun side of even programming. I remember like we didn't really have like those great, you know, any like more modern computers growing up for a long, long time. But I remember like, you know, we got like this really old Windows computer, is like probably 10 years old at the time. And I thought it was great because I remember like getting on there and doing like QBasic. And, you know, nowadays we have like Python and all this other stuff that is mainstream that is similar to these electronic kits, where you can go on and have these projects from a coding perspective that has a very low overhead to start. So I think it's just important to show the application, show how you can have fun with electronics in a very simple way, but not pressure. I think that was the best thing our parents did.
Yeah, the no pressure part's important there. And nothing's guaranteed, right? We definitely, there were probably aspects where, I remember growing up, I didn't know if I necessarily wanted to be an electrical engineer. And I think for a while there, I wanted to be a guitarist. And then, I played a lot of guitar growing up, almost 2 decades there. And then I remember journalism, we're both pretty into writing for the school newspaper, stuff like that. You know, it probably helps with the blog post, Verity Arp, like it's kind of nice to have that outlet. But I remember ham radio did kind of solidify that electronics and kind of realizing, wow, someone will pay me to do this. That's awesome. And, it's pretty lucky. But in terms of my thoughts on say, getting kids to be interested in it, I don't have kids at the moment, so like I haven't really had to face this, but I would agree that with the no pressure and just like showing the options of what's available and letting them kind of discover their own path is probably more empowering. And like times are changing too. Like I touched upon in the millennial post on FaradayRF.com that, we don't have to design and build computers nowadays. Some of us do. Like, I mean, Brent and I are more, we went to school for it. Like, we could sit there and design a Linux computer. But on the other hand, that's a lot of work. And there's a lot of cheap Linux computers. And like, the Raspberry Pi and all, anything which you can think of, like someone has probably made a version of it for. And that's a lot less work to do. And you can focus on the goals you want to achieve. So, unlike, say the 1970s and 80s, where people had to kind of design their own computers, and you had the computer clubs, right, in the Bay Area, where Apple came out of and stuff. Now, you don't have, like, the project isn't like getting a computer to work. That's kind of a solved problem. Let's cobble these things together: motherboards and RAM and hard drives and OSs, and let's do something interesting. So it's a little, I don't know if I want to say higher level. But it's the tools available to us have drastically expanded. Like we can go and design that really low level stuff, and some of us should. But as young makers and electrical engineers, we do have this amazing tool chest to pull out of. With Raspberry Pis and Oshpark boards that are like 4 layers for $20, and like Faraday's RF module, right? Which is, I don't have to design a full-on radio from scratch. Our chip does quite a bit of the modulation, and we can move on to solve the other problems we aim to achieve. So I think that's kind of a cool aspect where electronics is moving, and our generation is probably going to be very skilled in.
Exactly. Now, kind of going back for just a moment, you talking about your parents just kind of putting it out there and seeing if you're interested. I'm all over that. That's exactly how we try to do things here on the farm. When you tore the rototiller down, did you get in trouble, or was it like, man, you did what?
Broken.
Okay. Did you put it back together and get it working?
No, I did not.
Okay.
although Cal, I will say that I do remember being like super young, maybe like 6 or 7, and we had this old Mac Performer or whatever, whatever the brand was in like the early 90s, and System 7. And I remember being fascinated by like this programming stuff. Didn't know what I was doing, and I remember like downloading this thing, like hex edit thing, and I was like, I could change the message. I didn't know what I was doing at all. But I could like change the hello message when it booted up, and they did. I was like, "Hey, Dad," and every time it booted, but every now and then I would mess something up, and the whole computer wouldn't start. And I remember some very angry, I gotta go fix this, for my dad, getting up the old Mac like fix it disk and everything,
I think that was Mac, like System 7. I remember that was like 40 floppy disks.
Yeah. So I think that was our version of it.
Yeah, and Macs weren't cheap to break either back in those days.
No.
I mean, not that they're cheap today, but I remember coming up, we had a Commodore 128, and it was basically a glorified video game. And I remember some friends had Macs, and parents would basically hawk their car to buy a Mac. And that was, of course, what, 85, 6, 7, 8, so you guys were still, maybe not even around by then, but... Yeah, they were very, very expensive back in the day. But giving your kids an opportunity, whether, you know, like I'm not the electronics geek. I enjoy technology. But even then, I have limits on really what I'm interested in and what I'm not interested in. It doesn't mean that my kids have to like any of it. It doesn't mean that they have to like all of it. But just kind of putting it out there, I think that when we just allow them the opportunity to find themselves wherever they want to do. I've got three boys. They're really big into motion pictures. They like making film. And it's really cool to see them work out these things in their mind and be able to take their idea, storyboard it, and then put something together. You know, it is what it is, but they're having a good time and they're learning at the same time. So it's neat to see how they can recognize, you know what, if we got the go-kart running again, we could use it to strap a camera on and have a chase scene. So, you know, one of the winter projects this year is to tear the go-kart down and get it running again. So just stuff like that.
Wait until they start building jumps.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
So Cal, I'd like to just add on to kind of like maybe wrap it up that one of the things that I think Bryce and I have a little bit naturally, because we're twins that are very close, mm-hmm. And we grew up doing a lot of things together, and it was amplified by the fact that ham radio, we had a bunch of ham radio clubs in the area growing up in the Northeast that were really good. And, you know, WB1GOF of Westford, Mass was probably the one that we went to the most, but there are other great ones in the areas that we went to. But that sense of community really helped us. And so I think having the maker scene, especially where even if you yourself are not that skilled in electronics or don't really know how to give more than you know, I think one of the most important things is finding peers, you know, the young potential STEM children, finding peers that can enjoy that with them. And I think the maker scene and going to different maker events or clubs that might have peers of their age, that will allow them to explore that much, much more organically, where it doesn't feel like, you know, it's what you do with your parent.
Right.
And I think for Bryce and I, we had that naturally with each other, which helped.
Yeah, I remember.
I think that was really important.
Yeah, I remember, like, when we first got licensed, like, we were on QRZ.com, like, this is, like, 2004. So, you know, QRZ has changed drastically a bit, but at least in my opinion. But it, I remember we were on the forums there, and, like, randomly one day, because, our, you know, your call signs have your address, this ham from, I think, the Michigan area. Brent, do you remember this? That had just sent us a box of old radio, like a 2-meter radio from his father who had recently passed away, and, like, just with a note going, hey, like, I have no use for this stuff. It works. It's great. Have fun. Welcome to the hobby. And it was just I remember that sense of community was just amazing. That really helped.
Well, let me ask you guys this, because you are so much younger than the large majority of us here listening. Of course, we got some young guys and gals too, but do you fear amateur radio crashing and burning because the supposed lack of youth or lack of involvement from young people in the hobby?
Not really. I would say no.
See, I don't either. But go ahead.
At least my viewpoint on that is that it's really easy to be fearful. You know, obviously in all aspects of like the world right now, like you know, there's a lot of just emotions going around. But fear is one of those things that like you can look at the hobby and be like, oh man, there's like no kids here. And you know, this. I mean, it's an older person hobby. Like that's something we should just blast on to you. Like it's really hard when you look at like I make the point on a lot of my blog posts on Faraday RF that if you pit the internet against ham radio loses every time. Like the internet does really well. You know, we're talking over the internet, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it is connecting us. But you know, if let's look at like ham radio's really, really advantageous aspects are things like the last 10 miles, right? You get the last 500 feet from Wi-Fi. But like if you try to use Wi-Fi like over a couple miles, you have to have like point-to-point antennas. It gets really difficult. You have to, right? But ham radio, man, like the last 10 miles, it's easy for us. Or the last 3,000 if for some reason you're in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, the internet, you know, is, as we all know, is not easy to get in very rural areas. So there are aspects of it that I think if you look at it from what is the general population exposed to and what are kids interested into, it's a hard sell. And that, let alone, you know, things like as you're growing up in high school and college, people wax and wane. But, you know, getting them early is one thing. I think where I always enjoyed seeing the youth activities in the late high school to college. Like, I'm always a little conflicted on, like, when I see a lot of effort into recruitment of, like, 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but it's like they're probably going to get out of it in high school. And there's this, like, a massive opportunity, I think, for ham radio in like colleges, because people have moved away. They're trying to find themselves. They're trying to find clubs they're interested in. Like, pretty much the reason Brent and I are at SpaceX is because of our activity in the radio club at RIT. And, you know, we really put ourselves into that club, and it enabled us to do a lot of these really cool projects and gain this experience. But, you know, I remember when we went to RIT, we were, you know, really into ham radio, but then there was that opportunity of, well, the radio club's here, let's take that and run, like, let's do something with it. And if that hadn't been there, it probably would have much different lives right now. But it allowed us at that crucial point in life to like really kind of take grasp of the hobby, at least in the way that we wanted to.
Yeah, I would agree. And I like to add in that although I am not fearful for the hobby going away because of the lack of, you know, or perceived lack of youth involvement, it is a generally older person's hobby. And when I say older, I don't mean, you know, 50s and 60s and 70s, 80s, you know, keep going up, you know, 150, you know, maybe 50 years from now, we'll all be living that long. But what I mean is that ham radio is expensive. Like, it's right now it is expensive. It is getting slightly cheaper, but when you're a 10-year-old, you don't have your own income other than your maybe an allowance, maybe. And when you do that, like, who do you talk to that can relate to you at all, unless you went in a club of other 10-year-olds? So it's when you're in college, though, end of high school and college, though, you start to form those social groups that are much more tight. And for us, when the thing I noticed about ham radio clubs in high school and college that were driven by those students at the time, not driven by a faculty member or someone else, that those groups were focused, at least in my experience, on the social aspect first of a club and the radio side secondary, because it was still a club. And what we found in the RIT club was that we would meet, and we would meet as friends. There was different subgroups of, like, friends that, you know, maybe got along better than other groups. But we turned it also into a project club that did projects to learn and to do cool things. We had a repeater, but we did a different form of amateur radio than maybe the mainstream older adults did. We didn't really get on and do much HF, just chatting. Some people did every now and then. We did a few contests, but, like, it really wasn't a focus. The focus was sort of being a club and exploring this technology. I think that's important to remember, because it shows that amateur radio is much more than just making contacts.
The radio club grew to, like, over 20 people. It was big for a ham radio club. In college, at least.
Yep, and it really structured around, you know, good leadership, and also not holding the club to, say, preconceived activities. It was, let's just get together and have fun. We would get together on the weekends, of all things. Like,
worked out really well.
People thought we were crazy in the club. We want this to be a more fun experience. And so early on, we were like, let's meet at, like, 11 a.m. on Saturday mornings. And everyone's like, this is college. You really think anyone's going to get up at 11 a.m. in the morning on Saturday? And sure enough, you know, people did.
Was a very open, like, we, like, yeah, you and I would almost always arrive at 11. But, like, we'd be like, all right, we're going to be in the room, like, having, like, an open meeting from, like, 11 to, like, 3. and show up whenever, yeah. right? And people would show up, like, we'd get people show up at 1, but, like, they'd show up and they'd hang out for 2 hours, right? And then some people would show up at 11 and then, like, leave at, like, 12 because they had to go do schoolwork or something. And, like, that kind of just relaxed aspect, I think, really helped people feel welcomed. And we also, like, obviously, Brent and I were really into projects, but, we had people who, you know, who wanted to do public service. And, like, while we weren't, like, super out there trying to do all the public service, anytime anyone in the club, like, organized with, I think, RARA, the Rochester Amateur Radio Association, like, would organize, you know, an event with them, we'd be like, yeah, like, here, take all the radios. Like, as long as you ask, just, you know, because we were officers at the time, like, you know, we were trying to focus the club at least onto what most of the members wanted. But, like, when a small subset of the members wanted to, say, go out and do emergency stuff, we were totally up for it, you know. And I think the keeping that open mind to it really helped that flourish, and not holding people to that preconceived notion of what ham radio is, letting college students kind of explore it and figure out what is ham radio to them.
You know, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, even for today's modern or antiquated amateur radio clubs all over the U.S., not everybody's going to want a piece of paper on their wall. Not everybody's going to want to be a member of the league. Not everybody is going to want to be an Aries. We've proven in almost 90 episodes of this show that we still haven't scratched the surface in amateur radio yet, but there's so much to do. Just let people enjoy the hobby in the way that they want to enjoy the hobby, whether they're teenagers, right, millennial, college students, or grumpy old men. Just have fun.
Yeah, I mean, fun's the reason you do a hobby. Like, none of us get paid for this, and yeah. it's like, I mean, obviously, you know, there are people who start companies and everything like that, but, like, when you're actually using the bands, like, it's all for fun. Like if it's not fun, then you probably shouldn't be doing it. And when people tell you what to do on it, you know, that can be a turnoff, especially as a young college student who has all these other opportunities available to them. And someone's sitting there, you know, saying, well, you need to make these contacts, or, like, you know, if you don't know Morse code, you know, you're not a real ham. It's like, well, okay. Like, I have all these other things that are pulling for my attention. You know, there's these really cool aspects of the hobby, but if I can't do those without doing, say, Morse code, then, you know, people lose interest quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's very, very dangerous for the hobby to look at different, you look at some people that are doing maybe more unique things in ham radio that aren't the socially accepted normal. And you see this a lot on the newer digital modes that are coming out, or even things like what Bryce and I are doing with Faraday RF. And people look at it and go, oh, that's not ham radio. and that's a very dangerous thing to get into, especially when there is a large majority of people on the younger demographic of ham radio exploring this. It sets up a wall, and that's a very dangerous thing for hobby. So although I'm not afraid of the hobby going away, it is going to change whether people like it or not. And the difference is if no one embraces it, is going to change very slowly and very small. If we embrace it, it's going to open a floodgate of opportunity for everyone and expand the use. Ham radio is fun. It gets more fun when more people do it.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I touched on it in the millennial post I just had up, that we're kind of on this verge of forever becoming a retro activity where, like, you get on, you enjoy the retro aspects of it, Morse code and, you know, talking over voice over HF, which, you know, I mean, there's some modern aspects to that as well. But, you know, in terms of comparing it to, like, the internet and cell phones, it is kind of retro. Or, as Brent stated, on this cusp of, if we embrace what we really are and what we can be, which is probably different than what we were, we could be, like, quite an interesting hobby, you know, and really catch people who wouldn't necessarily consider it an interesting hobby in the past, but are absolutely fascinated with it because of all those advantages of getting your license and what that offers you as someone who wants to say use it as, say, like a medium and to do something with.
Nice. And I want to talk about that the next time we're together here. Yeah, and just like that, I'm gonna stop, and I'm gonna make you wait till the next time. And sorry. Well, I mean, it's something I want to continue sharing this with you, but I don't want to just throw everything at you at the same time, right? So if you finish this one up, you get to the end, this is the end. The next program, we're going to continue talking to the brothers. We're going to continue to learn about the future in their mind of ham radio, the exciting ideas they have to keep this hobby going forward, as well as some of the products that they're bringing onto market, into market, to help further this thing that we know as ham radio. We'll be back next time with the brothers as we continue the conversation, Faraday RF and more, on the Ham Radio 360 podcast.
Thank you for listening. You can find more online at hamradio360.com. 73, y'all.